And we welcome in Christy Blatcher from the National Post. Tiffany Hensby is here from the Dave Agar Newsroom at News Talk 1010. Bill Hayes is here filling in for Jerry Agar this week. And Amanda Galbraith, in on her regular Friday contributor here on Round 1, is from Navigator. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Morning.
Can we just start? I know there was much said yesterday about Chief Saunders. Anybody with a reaction one way or the other with what he might have had to offer yesterday, Amanda?
I thought it was smart. You know, historically, we haven't seen the chief kind of come up proactively and do things like this. And I think laying out what's happened over the course of the year, and it's been, you know, a tremendously, I think, challenging and changing year for the city and for the police in particular. I had no idea about the fact they'd seized all, like, double the number of firearms and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's important people know that the police are out working, and we put some context around what's going on in the city, which is, you know, somewhat scary for folks, I would say.
Christy, the only concern I would have is that we might be having the same conversation at this time next year about the same topics.
We might well. I don't think so. I hope not. I mean, the number of homicides was badly skewed by the van attack and the Danforth shooting. So, I mean, you take those numbers away and the total is much more within, you know, the bad enough normal range. So inshallah, we will not have another mass casualty incident, and some of the anti-gun stuff will start to kick in. In reality, I think the anti-gun programs that the chief and others are talking about will take probably a generation if
Bill?
We stick to it.
Well, I agree with Amanda, actually. I think that the more that Chief Saunders or whoever gets in front of mm-hmm. any of these stories, the better it is. The fact is that I've heard an awful lot of people concerned about the shootings and so on in our city in the last, certainly in the last little while, it seems like it's gotten bigger and a much bigger story. So to get in front of that, I think, is something that does help an awful lot. I just think we should see more of this kind of stuff, not less.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was going to mention. I mean, if you really want people to feel safe in the city, you really need to sort of get those faces, the face of the chief and even frontline officers kind of out there and get them talking about what's going on. I mean, I wasn't terribly surprised by anything that we heard from the chief on this. I mean, it's, you know, forward looking. It's been a unique year. All of those are kind of things we've heard before. But I mean, it is what it is. And so I guess we'll see what happens in the new year.
When we get to this time of year, of course, we always want to make lists, and we have a sort of, we review and we take good stock of where we are and where we're going. And today in your National Post column, Christy, I thought you were very authentic.
As long as you're not going to call me out.
Christy,
it was just a fun column.
Christy outlined the number of things that just sort of drive you crazy and get under your skin. And it's, you know, any one of those things by itself wouldn't have. But, I a lot of it resonated with me in that whole notion of being really authentic. It just, can we kind of lose that?
I feel like, you know, you're trying very hard to be authentic.
I feel like
good.
I am, yes, yeah. As opposed to, I think, indeed. Any of those pet peeves that you got, Amanda, that kind of you hear every once in a while, think, oh, enough of this?
The one thing that stood out to me just as a regular TTC rider was the part in Christie's column where she talked about the guy with the backpack full of, like, 25 pounds of I don't know what, like, swinging around. I'm just like, just put your bag down. I know that's ridiculous, but it's one thing that made me crank. I will say I'm feeling very grateful for 2018 was a big year for me for change, and I'm really excited for the new year. So I'm feeling very positive today, even though it's 7:30 and I technically am off.
Bill, have you got one of those lists of passwords too? I mean,
Password stuff is that's interesting. That's a whole different story. I actually may get into that between 9 and noon today. But the thing that was interesting to me, and I think it's probably more true for other people, but you mentioned at one point in there, Christy, about is there a doctor who doesn't give out medical marijuana? I actually know one, and I'm upset because it's my doctor. But the point is that I think a lot of that, especially now that marijuana is legal, hard to find, mind you, but legal, that's not going to be an issue going forward. And to your point, it did seem like every time you turned around, some guy had a hangnail and he had, 3 pounds of marijuana because his doctor said he needed it. So
that's a scam.
True.
It's a scam.
Of course. But when I look back at this year, there's nothing that I really think was a bad thing. I think, I could bitch and moan about Trump, but let's not do that.
Well, you know, on the marijuana story, though, my brother-in-law is a doctor, and his concern is that a lot of the doctors who are prescribing marijuana are actually investing in marijuana. And they're part of the industry that's growing it and selling it. So he's having, and he's in a pain management guy, he's an anesthetist, and he's having patients come back to him and telling him that they're being upsold by the company when they prescribe the marijuana.
I know three different people who do not know each other, and all three of them have invested in different marijuana things. It's obviously it's a growth business.
Well, it's a little different when the doctor's the one investing in the medication.
For sure.
Right. This story from about the meaningful consent, and you know, meaningful consent earlier in the year had a different meaning when we were talking about Me Too. In this digital age, it's kind of an interesting thing. I was talking to you and I were talking to Tony there just in a crossover one day this week, and Tony's convinced that this whole issue of making our data available to just about anybody is going to be more of a story in the next year than we otherwise know. Privacy Commissioner Daniel Therrien in Ottawa has sort of laid out this, you know, these guidelines for websites, data collectors, to say they need to be more proactive in terms of how they make us aware of the data that they're collecting, the data that they're using, how they're sharing it. But what I found really interesting, Amanda, is one of the things he's talking about is that it's the onus is on them also to make you aware of the risks associated with sharing data. And that could affect, you know, your employment, embarrassment, especially because there may be a data breach. We're really kind of moving into a whole new area here. And I realize it's voluntary, these guidelines, but I think it's an important statement based on how, you know, easily we give up all of our information.
Yeah, and I do a lot of work with different tech companies. So meaningful consent is a space that I think they've been very cognizant of for a while. It's becoming more part of the common lexicon that people are talking about. But, you know, the data and tech are infiltrating our lives in ways it hasn't before. So before you just download an app and click OK, go, and it didn't really matter, right? But in the next 5, 10, 15 years, your entire brand presence is going to be online. So people do need to be made aware. I think there's got to be a fine line of, you know, making sure people actually read it as opposed to just clicking so I can go to the app and buy the thing or play the game, and making it so onerous on individuals that that they don't do it at all, right? Because I think we are going to need to figure out a way to weave tech and this kind of stuff throughout our lives in a responsible way. So we're going to struggle with this. And I think it is going to be a bigger story over the next year, as it should be. But I hope it's a balanced discussion and not just fear-mongering, which is kind of where I fear it's starting to go a little bit.
Yeah, Tiffany, it's one of those things, though, even the clarity around the language, I think, is really critical here.
Absolutely. And I mean, this one of these guidelines is sort of emphasizing key phrases, right? Things like, okay, exactly what are they collecting? How are they using it? And who are they giving it to? And I mean, so it's one thing to hand you this big, long list full of legalese that you're never going to read. Nobody reads it. You're going to click past. But if perhaps I can have a few bold point form notes that say, lay out very clearly, this is what's happening. Okay, I can quickly kind of scan through that and I can make a choice. Most people just don't think about how much of their data is being used. And I mean, remember this, if you're getting an app, and especially if it's free, there's nothing free. So if you're not paying for that app, they're using your data.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think with the Hey Google or the Amazon Alexa app was the biggest one downloaded on Christmas. And, you know, all of those things, we're just becoming, I think, aware as a society, just what we're giving up in all of this. I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. I think we're going to see a lot more of this. The internet itself is the wild, wild west, and we're starting to pull back the reins a little bit. This is just a start to it.
Well, Christy, the challenge for me, though, is no, all the adults in the room can be adults and be responsible. I was telling the story and we were laughing about it, but when we were down visiting my granddaughter in Halifax last month, she's sitting at the kitchen table and she says, "Hey, Google, play Raffi." Mm-hmm. And on comes Raffi. So this is a world that our kids are growing up in, and she has no concept of, you know, data or exchanging information. That's the one part of it. And the other part of it is we're moving into this whole era of smart cities. So if I'm going to drive through Quayside, where is my meaningful consent there? I think that there are going to be layers, but it's going to be a much bigger thing than just ticking a box.
For sure, I agree. I think Amanda's hit it on the head, actually, that it's we have to have a plainer, bolder discussion, an ongoing discussion about what we're giving up and what we're giving away without, you know, running around like the sky is falling. So it will be unusual if the discussion proceeds in the balanced fashion that Amanda hopes.
Indeed.
Yeah, and sadly, typically, ironically, perhaps it'll all happen online. The mayor says he remains committed to Vision Zero, and that's the initiative here in the city to basically get the number of pedestrian cyclist deaths down to zero by the year 2021. That's fast approaching, and the challenge here is that we've almost hit a record year. I mean, 47 people, pedestrian cyclists, killed so far in Toronto this year. Bill, one of the things that struck me about this, I'm not suggesting we shouldn't spend the money on it, but it just floored me when I learned and realized we're spending $100 million on these initiatives over 5 years. Sounds like a lot of money for common sense stuff.
Oh, yeah, it does. But from what I understand, a lot of this is actually swirling somewhere inside City Hall because they're changing things. Like with anything, Vision Zero is an idea that's been used by an awful lot of cities in North America and around the world, actually. And it's a system that's put into place, and you have to, I guess, in some way, make it unique to Toronto. So things have to change, and that's costing a lot of money in this. With anything like this, the money that you lay out at first is going to be substantial. We've made it more so because that's how it works. It isn't working yet, but you can't stop. I mean, the point of the matter is we've got a problem, and if this is going some way to fix it, keep going.
Well, I would agree. You have to do something, and the money doesn't bother me so much because some of those sort of practical items are important. But I think what's really missing from this conversation is we have to change mindsets. And how do you do that? Because, I mean, driving around, and I think everybody's guilty of this, whether you're walking, driving, you think, you know, you're kind of number one in your own mind, and everybody else is an idiot. And so how do we sort of get people to take ownership of making the city safer? And I think that's really been kind of something that hasn't been talked about that much.
I agree with you. And I think the emphasis in any sort of public education campaign ought to be on drivers, because cut it any way you like, the people driving the 60,000 pounds or however much a car weighs are more responsible because they are inherently more lethal. So they, and I see every day, as we all do, people texting and driving, going through red lights mindlessly. I saw a guy get pulled over by the OPP in the last week or so for going through a red light. I stopped, he went, blew right by me. I was thrilled that they finally caught somebody, you know? That we drivers, and I'm a pedestrian mostly, but a sometimes driver, we need to be the ones who are, you know, called out, dare I say.
I agree. Shockingly, I agree with Christy.
Shocking.
As always, listen, I think this is a tough issue, and it always is. And the mayor's, you know, having worked for him, had threaded the needle on this one as much as he can. One interesting thing is I've been in focus groups. No one actually, like, the public doesn't know what Vision Zero means. It's a real issue that activists rally around, which understandably is fine. But I think, you know, the way this conversation goes, it gets polarized. And if you don't do exactly what everybody wants on the one side, then you get, you know, the crap beat out of you by critics. So they've said he's invested a lot of money in this. They're going to continue to do so. Bottom line is we have streets that were designed for people with cars, not for pedestrians and not for cyclists. And it's going to cost a lot of money to fix that and change it. And it is what it is.
It's going to take some time.
Yeah, totally, for sure. But there's some things they've done. For example, they've put those traffic, the officers in the major intersections. So me as a pedestrian, I'm like, oh, the clock's going down 2:31. I'm going to run. Cop goes, blows the whistle, like hand in my face, like, don't you dare.
Right.
Because I shouldn't be, right? As a pedestrian, I should not be doing that. So I think there are changes that are happening. It's happening slowly, you know, but it will be fixed. It just will take time.
Well, somebody suggesting this morning, maybe the answer is also to get Elmer, the safety elephant, back into the school.
So we'll just go, Elmer. Go
I don't remember
circle.
Elmer. I think no, I was
well,
too young.
Well, there you go.
Yes.
Well, you know, we'll have to bring Elmer to your office.
He remembers
Perfect.
You. He being an elephant.
That'll do it for round one. Thanks, folks.